This is a shout out to my good friend Uma, who was really there for me yesterday. And I was going to put this into the group chat, but it was like a bit too like personal, as in that it was just me complaining about Spanish people to Uma. And I felt that I didn't want to be too insensitive. But I was in the gym and there are these two young Spanish males being so loud that I can hear them through their music. And I just text Uma and I'm like, I don't know how you live in an entire country full of these people.
Like, yeah, I mean, at least Catalonia is not so Spanish in a sense, but also I've always avoided Spanish people wherever.
I mean, I couldn't. This is my tiny little gym that I go to, but it was like immediately I clocked it. I was like, it's like, I don't know what it is. I mean, I do know what it is. It's like there is a tone that then Spanish men speak in that drives me insane. And it is the sense, too, that as Uma mentioned, they're probably talking about the dumbest shit ever. And I believe you.
And I'm sure they were like from Madrid or something.
100%. Yeah,
what I mean?
Well, it's that hyper nasally Spanish.
I love that, like, I'm just imagining, like, Uma's conception of these two guys just in the gym talking loudly, pissing off Nick, and what they're talking about is, like, talking about something stupid, like, Spanish unionism or something. It's
just like... Oh, yeah. These...
Talking about Real Madrid or something.
Probably, yeah. They're like, oh,
hey,
did
bro,
you...
you ever think about how cool it is that Catalonia is a part of Spain? You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Stupid.
Dumb. Yeah, no, they 100% were talking about, like, oh, did you watch the game last night? Where then Real Madrid lost to Bayern, exactly. But whatever, yeah.
And I'm also picturing them so perfectly. Like, you didn't even need to... You know,
Uma, you're welcome. I love you. This is for you.
Love you too.
This is, but I feel that I've graduated in the sense of Europeanness. That then I can like tell where someone is from. Where I like don't really under. I like again, my music is on and I can hear the tones of their voice coming through. And I'm like, they're Spanish.
Yeah, that is like
I remove my headphone and I was 100% correct.
Yeah.
That is kind of like the ultimate Europeanness of just like, hey, look, there's a slightly different type of white person to me, and I hate them.
Yeah. Oh, the Dutch. Don't get me started on the Dutch. Or the Danes.
I'm so fucking angry.
That episode that we did last week on Svalbard, I'm pissed at the Norwegians now.
Hey. Welcome to your weekly Corner Spady. It is me, Kieran. I am joined by Uma.
Hello.
And Nick.
Hey, yo. I'm racist now, apparently.
But in an adorable European way.
In a racist to other white people way, which isn't racist. It's just European.
Which is fine, yeah.
Yeah, it's fine now because we discovered other types of racism and they were worse. So,
all founded by the Europeans, crazy enough. That's why I don't like the Europeans, is that they suck.
Anyway. That today we're obviously going to be talking about probably like the biggest news story in like European affairs that is exclusively like European affairs.
That's right. Eric Adams is Albanian. Tune into the bonus episode.
Nick, I saw the twinkle in your eye as Karen was saying that Nick was getting ready to say the dumbest shit.
Go fuck yourself. All right.
We went to I love you.
I get the highest compliment of being on this show, which is then people listen to this and they're all like, oh, here's some American loser doing his worst Felix Biedermann impression.
What? I don't know who that is.
Exactly.
So no,
it doesn't matter.
So in a sense, I want to talk about it. In another sense, I don't, because I feel like Eric Adams was always Albanian, like at his heart.
Oh, no.
Okay, was it just randomly made? Okay, I need the story, Nick, please. Go on.
He became Albanian. He's an Albanian citizen. The story behind it is that then I am surprised that he didn't become Turkish because he was doing so much corruption on behalf of the AKP during his time as mayor. But it is, it's just the thing that then Eric Adams, one, I again, my favorite Eric Adams point of you know, a little tidbit of info about him is that then he was at the club every single night. So boys out there, but also like every week was then saying like, I'm Italian, I'm Albanian, I'm Turkish, when like meeting with like local populations of New York City.
Yeah, that video is so funny. Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
I guess it just has like progressed within that Albanians being the way they are, I guess, of being, you know, ultra, you know, proud of it. Hooked on to the fact that then Eric Adams, I think, also is like pictured doing the double eagle hand gesture at some point. They just, you know, at some point it had to happen, right?
There is one piece of this lore that you are forgetting and that I am not forgetting because it is Eurovision adjacent.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Of course.
Go on, King.
Yeah. So Eric Adams' son took part in Albania's national selection process for Eurovision. Didn't win, but he was there. And there is like an Instagram story from ages ago of like Eric Adams watching like Kengas Festivalis or whatever it is. I'm not pronouncing that right.
It's fine.
From his like hotel room in New York, because he doesn't live in New York and never did while mayor. But like, so that's also one other aspect of the Albanian connection, which is that his son Jordan Coleman, aka JAYOO, is a rapper.
JU, never mind. I'm not even gonna go into that one.
Coleman released a 2025 EP titled Jet Lag Dreams, inspired by his time in Albania. So
that's kind of sick, I'm not gonna lie.
Jesus.
So this Albanian connection is
jet lag dreams, just the same exact tone as Georgian Dream.
I think we should, we should probably listen to that album at some point. But yeah, Eric Adams is now Albanian.
Good for him, I guess.
Salute to my Balkan brother.
I hope he moves there. Like, is he going to move there?
I hope so. I mean... I don't think he can't, right? He'll like vacation there probably, but he doesn't. Eric Adams has such American energy that I don't see him living anywhere else. Like, he'd be bored of it. You know?
Yeah, true.
Like, he's so he's so out of his mind that only the United States can provide him the sustenance, the mental sustenance that he needs to survive. Every post interview, his main interview that he did with whatever that woman's name is, who I can't stand, is one of the most batshit insane things I've ever seen in my life, where he just like talks about having a six pack and like, you know, other shit like that. And then his crypto rug pull sort of thing. I don't even know if it was ever a rug pull, but he's like, I'm gonna use crypto to fight anti-Semitism or whatever.
Jesus Christ.
He's too cool. Like,
well, to listen to him, he has failed. Like, that guy crypto did nothing, according to them, about anti-Semitism in 2025. So.
Yeah. Oh well.
Who would have thunk?
Startup Nation, baby.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll check in on Eric and his increasing
his Albanian adventures,
his Albanianness levels.
I do love the fact that now he is a permanent he can become a permanent topic on the show because he's now European.
Yeah, it's like him and Chet Hanks.
Yeah, my two favorite Usonians.
Yeah. It was like, as soon as Chet Hanks got the, like, I think he got grandfathered into Greek citizenship because his parents got it, but like, yeah, so because of that, we're just like, it's fair game for the podcast. We can talk about Chet Hanks.
Exactly.
We can do the Chet Hanks voice and say it's a Greek accent.
I mean, it is.
In a very strict definition. Yeah. So the main topic of the episode, as I was trying to say, is about how the West has fallen, and Peter Magyar has taken over in Hungary. So yeah, we'll get to that in a second. First, we probably do need to address the news, which is coming in really hot and fresh right before we sat down to record, which is actually, realistically, might have completely changed by the time you're listening to this in like 2 days, to be perfectly honest, yeah. Is that the Strait of Hormuz is supposedly open again. So Trump truthed it out that it was open again.
The Strait of Iran is open, baby.
He called it the Strait of Iran, which, like, hilarious. And at the same time, I didn't really believe it or get totally notified until, like, the foreign minister of Iran also said that was going to happen. So, yeah, during the ceasefire, the strait will be open again, which is a bit more of a caveat than Trump is putting on it, which is to say, hey, this could happen again. And they could do it again, because I don't think the situation has really changed all that much, other than Iran can close it when they want. And they've shown the world what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the double closing of it was the literal dumbest thing. Like,
well, you say that, but now it's open again, so maybe it worked.
True. Yeah. What, Trump, like, Uno reversed Iran and won.
Yeah. And possibly has nothing to do with those images coming out of, like, U.S. aircraft carriers, like, having the toilets flood, and did anyone else see that, like, the food that the people on the aircraft carriers are getting at the moment?
No.
So basically,
slop,
a bunch of,
I imagine.
The U.S. like a bunch of like Navy Marines. They're Marines.
No,
right? Members of the
no,
Navy.
No. All right, the Marines are part of the Navy, but the Navy it would be sailors.
Sailors, yes. Interesting. Seamen.
Seamen, yes, exactly. Cum.
Yeah, a bunch of U.S. cum. They're getting, like, food packages from families back home because the food situation.
That's so tight.
Is, like,
a dying. One true, like,
World
Trump
War
wants-
II fucking.
The U.S. wants to have, like, a $1.4 trillion budget by the end of the Trump administration, and they can't even feed their stupid little boys.
I saw a picture of some of the food. It is bad. It was, so obviously they're all served on these like canteen trays, which, like, yeah, it's probably what you would expect when you eat on a boat. Mm-hmm. It's probably pretty good for eating on a boat, to be fair. And it was like refried, like a small portion of refried beans.
Oh,
and
God.
Then a slice of aubergine that had been cut so thin as to be translucent.
Tight. Hell yeah.
Oh my God.
I love the largest military in the world doing this. Because normally in the sense, it's like we see the videos of, like, you know, like, my favorite boomerism is when, like, they give active servicemen, like, steak and lobster, which is the sign that you were going to be deployed. And then boomers are like, look how good Trump is treating them. It's like, no. Trump is going to, like, turn them into putty. Like, this is not a normal meal in the military. This is a meal that you are getting before you are going to be, like, hit by a Shahed in, like, 24 hours.
Yeah, this is like a goose in France being like, I'm only eating chestnuts today. This rules.
Ew, I just looked up...
Sorry, Nick, on my pate joke.
Yeah. But it is like...
Uma, did you find the images?
The goop?
Oh my God, it's disgusting. It's like, they also get a bunch of boiled carrots. I don't think this... What is this? This aubergine looks radioactive.
Yeah.
It looks like
a sheet of plastic.
This is
it's
also
long.
What
oh my God.
We like get at like public schools in the US. So it's
and then like the the one tortilla.
That's tight.
Just like
the great thing is just like several of the like recesses in the tray God. Left empty.
Yeah, literally. Literally. This is so sad. Oh my God.
Yeah. So obviously Trump won. I guess.
Yeah.
We should have waited 2 days to book our flights, Kieran.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Me and Uma are booking flights back for Eurovision. Tickets now available. Check the links. And just the group chat was just us looking at the prices, be like, reopen the strings. Iran, reopen the fucking strings.
Oh, it was so expensive.
Yeah, so that has happened, and by the time you're listening, it might have unhappened. So, hey, the news. Am I right, folks? It's great. Oh, Christ. Anyway, yeah, it was also... Actually, sorry, I need to put further context. Mm-hmm. In the same feed that I'm getting these, like, clips of, like, what the American soldiers are currently eating, mm-hmm. and, like, people really need to look up that aubergine. It's fucked. It looks bad. I was also getting, like, I don't know why, Instagram has decided that, like, in terms of ads, it really wants me to sign up for some sort of, like, working on a rig for the Norwegian government. And it looks real good.
I mean, like, yeah, that would be a lot more money than we're all making combined.
Yes. So. And it's also like, you work, what was it? It was like, you work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, and you make like, you make six figures in a month.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And like, however,
Everything while you're there is bought and paid for. Like, it's free board, free food.
Yeah, however, you are living on maybe the scariest thing in human history.
Oh, yeah. It was a lot of, like, footage of, like, here's the game room and, like, here's the canteen. The canteen food looks a lot better than what people
I trust oil welfare state.
Oh yeah,
you know, I mean it is like unfortunately Norway does do certain things very well. I believe that they would treat you very well in terms of like feeding you and this and that and giving you nice things like little treats. However, I, as everyone should be, am deathly afraid of oil rigs.
There was also a lot of footage of like. Here's our gaming room. You've got like a PlayStation like 5 that you can play with anytime you're off of work. And then everything is just like swaying.
No. I am. Oh, they're so scary. Like the fact that they're in the ocean, scary enough, and there's just these massive, monstrous things on stilts. No. Maybe we should get off of our dependency on oil strictly for my fear of these things.
I don't have to know that these things exist.
Yeah. These, I don't know what it is. The vibes fucking suck. Get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Norway will go broke immediately.
No, they've successfully diversified, actually. I think
it's the
Gulf states and whatever that are just trying, like, come on, guys, what if we did, like, UFC? Is that the same as oil?
Yeah, what if we turn Cristiano Ronaldo into a financial asset?
What do you mean this isn't making as much money as oil? That's crazy! anyway, we should talk about Hungary. All right, before we get into the knock-on effects of any of this and what any of this means, liberal reactions, our reactions, I'm just going to go through the straight facts, which is as follows. There was an election on April 12th, 20...
Sorry, I thought that was it.
Yeah, this is... Yeah, there's an election. Kieran is doing the, like, absolute dipshit thing when, like, a person is like, the Webster's definition of election is...
Of Hungary.
Of Hungary is
a feeling of a sensation in the body when you desire food. The election took place on April 12th, 2026. It was a Sunday, classic European stuff. And we got a... seat distribution of as follows. Coming in first place with 138 seats is Tisna. Coming in second place is Orban's Fidesz, 55 seats. And then a far right party called Mi Hazank with 6 seats. They're the only 3 parties now in parliament. And yeah, it's a big deal for a handful of reasons. One, record high turnout, 79%. Obviously, Viktor Orban's government of 16 years is now over. And the other big one is that the Hungarian parliament is 199 seats, which means that I believe Tisna has enough seats to put through constitutional reforms.
Yeah.
They're one of those countries that does the, like, if you have 2/3, you can do it.
And I have seen some of the biggest dipshit takes for that reason, but we'll get to it.
Yeah. At this point now, I think we can just talk about, like, our reactions and the reactions of others to this, because I think my feeling is a bit like it's mixed and a wait and see kind of thing. Because actually, before we do that, I should mention what actually these people were campaigning on, because one thing I'm becoming acutely aware of when we did the Slovenian election episode is how, like, coverage that exists in the English language and thus outside of Slovenia kind of frames elections in other countries in purely geopolitical terms. And, like, naturally enough, when you go to the poll in your own country, you're probably not thinking about that shit, right? Like, no one's going to the polls in, like, Germany being like, am I pro-Ukrainian or pro-Russian? And then watch The Guardian talk about a German election entirely in those terms. So, campaign issues that I just wanted to, like, highlight that I found from, like, Hungarian language sources, Kieran's new favorite thing of just, like, smashing that Google Translate button. We've got the geopolitical stuff was there, but it was low down because, you know, Peter Magyar and Viktor Orban were trying to, like, force that distinction between each other. But the two other big, the biggest thing on this is cost of living. Cost of living in Hungary is bad in a lot of different ways. The two different parties had different ways of addressing this and different demographics they wanted to appeal to. Tisna campaigned on, like, rental reforms. They have it in their party platform. They're going to set up, like, a state body that issues, like, rented properties at, like, a fairer price. And Viktor Orban's party had a whole thing that they brought in, I think, a while ago, and they want to continue, which is called, like, the 13th pension. Basically, there's a bonus pension payout that is equivalent to 1 month's pension payout for pensioners. So you get, like, 13 payments a year rather than 12. Cost of living crisis seems to be the big one. And then there was, like, a rule of law and geopolitical kind of discussion happening at the same time, and that's what, like, Guardian Europe is obsessed with. They were present. So, with that, Peter Magyar. I want everyone to chime in with what their Peter Magyar name would be. Mine would be Sean Aronach. I'm going to say Nick Baseball.
this is my name and the thing that I like.
What's your Peter Magyar name? Yeah, it's like a Facebook quiz.
what's my sorting house?
Yeah. Like, you're like, tell me where you're from.
I'm Nikki USA, obviously, as it says on my name Nikki, here today.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Anyway, what do we all think of this whole election?
Who wants to go first? As in,
I think Nick has a lot of opinions.
I have a lot to say.
So should go last.
Yeah exactly.
Oh, bitch. Fine. Whatever. Go fuck yourself.
No, you go with the it's the building crescendo.
No, because I think in the sense that a lot of the stuff that is on my mind is on the gang's mind, right? So
yeah. Sure, probably, yeah.
I mean, or not, or you guys
we wouldn't be.
I mean, I think I the first thing that then is I guess we can, like, go down the list of things I think that are, like, most apparent to them, things are like the sit and wait and see things, right? So the most, because Kieran mentioned this last, of like the rule of law sort of discussion in Hungary. And I think this is where I maybe have seen the dumbest contrarian takes, at least here in Germany, where it has not been like, you know, the foreign policy thing, sure, here and there. But like the annoying, like, well, actually, ultra leftist take that I have seen, particularly there was a really stupid article in like Junge Welt about this. Is that then they're calling Peter Magyar like the Turbo Orban because he is going to use, your look is very much justified, because Peter Magyar is going to use the state and his ability to then do these changes within the parliamentary majority to then overturn a lot of Orban stuff within the first like few months or whatever. That apparently is Orbanism. And I was lost. I was like, no, that is how the state functions. You would like the idea that then that we cannot seem to understand, because liberals are very good at doing this, conservatives are very good at doing this, leftists are babies about it, of like, you have a supermajority, go for it. You know, like, you are doing then the legal, like, there is a lot, I think, that I am, for all of the problems of Peter Magyar that we will get to, I think, in a bit, there is at least the thing that then that I do have to then believe that the will of, you know, these right-wing liberals is to then overturn some of the like bad parts of Orbanism, right? Like, Orbanism was very odd. It was building a cartel state more or less around Viktor Orban, to the point that then it's like just unofficially is declared Europe's, like, you know, dictator, this and that and that. A lot of similarities, of course, between like him and like an Erdogan sort of person. I do think that there is going to be an attempt to then, you know, get rid of at least some of the on the surface very weird things, the constitutional reforms that Orban passed. It's, you know, et cetera, this kind of like, you know, also just like the fact of that, then how he used the state as like a bullying platform for him as well, too. I have to then be optimistic in that, right? Like, I can't be a complete annoying leftist and be like, oh no, they're the same. They are not the same, you know?
Yeah, I think that's probably the thing I was probably most afraid of, which is that Peter Magyar might come in and be a good kind of like, in the way the Democrats try to be, like a good liberal, in the sense of like, I will not, you know, when they go low, we go high, you know, we will not stoop to Orban's level. And my reaction, who I would compare it to, is like, no, do Lula in Brazil, immediately go after.
No. They're never going to do that. They're never going to do that level of stuff. I think that it will be like, I don't know. There is a bunch of like, surface level kind, like, again, as I mentioned, like the constitutional reforms that then probably should or may be overturned. I don't know if they're going to get around to then changing like the tax system, that weird tax break thing that Orban made for, like, you know, if you have 7 kids before the age of 30, that you don't have to pay taxes.
Like white nationalist tax breaks.
Yeah. There are these things that I'm curious of that then, like, will those things be overturned? Who knows? Orban also then very much did a lot of like, planning the economy sort of stuff to then be extremely not beneficial to the Roma population, as we have like never really mentioned on this show, of that how hyper targeted they were. And I don't see a right wing conservative liberal government, whatever you want to call them, being good about that, especially in the sense that then Peter Magyar himself is like, you know, also kind of racist.
Yeah. I think the context we need to give here is that Peter Magyar is or was an insider within Orban's Fidesz. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't come from a radically different place as such. It's also worth pointing out that I think this moment is occurring because Orbanism was like not functioning to a certain extent, like because of this cost of living crisis, which you were meant to be avoiding by staying close to Russia. That was like the pitch of like, we keep the Russian gas flowing so that like shit in Hungary doesn't become like too expensive. That's the whole reason. That's how you sold it to the public. And it's like, well, shit, that's not working. due to other mismanagement, I'm sure. The what I meant by the Lula sense was more just like, you can't come in and let the opposition, like, let the opposition, which is now Fidesz, be. You can't just like leave him alone. You actually have to do stuff. And it does seem like he's doing a little bit of that. I think the thing that got circulated a lot was Peter Magyar finally got interviewed after he won. Yeah.
It's pretty funny. I will hand that to him.
Oh, he's, it is.
Just literally like, yeah, I'm being interviewed, but you didn't want me here for years. Mm. You only started inviting me in January 2026, and I'm going to shut down this channel. Yeah. This state to me, and the woman is like freaking out. You can tell she's like,
"Yeah, it's like we're closing down this propaganda network immediately." Like,
yeah,
and that I think is what you need to do. You cannot like, I feel like just to the Democrats in the United States, because I actually think this is the best example. It's like a Democrat will win in some sort of important office, let's say president, because it's the most important one. And we'll just like leave the like MAGA Koch brother fucking influence network alone.
Oh, and yeah, yeah. But
will be fine.
Democrats are like, I do think in the sense of like the European neoliberal is a bit more vicious. Macron is the best example of this, right? Like, there is what the Democrats don't have that a like, you know, a neoliberal European ideologue has is an actual understanding of how politics functions. The Democrats think that all they have to do is campaign on elections constantly, 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 constantly. And I do think that then, and this is where I have a lot of my concerns of, not even necessarily just like a Hungarian sense, but it is like the general kind of end of history vibe of this type of candidate, like a Peter Magyar or a Donald Tusk in Poland, of that then the center right, neoliberal, pro-Europe entity, pro-NATO entity is the end point for politics that we are at. And as we mentioned kind of previously, that then it's like, well, what will these institutions look like, you know, if they change? And at the end of the day, they can just kind of chug on forever as long as, like, you know, the skeletal remains of capitalism are also then chugging along into fascism. And that is kind of the thing where it's like, you know, Peter Magyar, I think, is going to get a lot of credit no matter what happens, simply in the sense that then he's very smart in the idea that then it's like being pro-EU, being pro-NATO is going to get him a lot of leeway within the, you know, kind of tastemakers within European politics. Hungary is a tiny country. I think the population's like, what, it's like between 9 to 15 million or something of that sort.
No, I think it's
even smaller.
Austria is
Austria is
8 million.
So exactly, so like it's a country that then population wise doesn't matter too much. It has been an ideological battleground for the past 16 years because of the international nationalism that then Orbán's been promoting, making Budapest the center of that, which we can then address of what will happen to that. But I think in the sense of that, then Europe is going to look at this in the sense of like they did with Poland. Again, Poland economy under like now no longer under the PiS government's doing perfectly fine. Poland's on tat, like, you know, is skyrocketing in, you know, economic growth, doing perfectly fine within the European institutions, is seen as a staple of Europeanism, and has maintained all the white nationalism, you know?
Yeah. I think actually the comparing the Tusk takeover moment, or like Tusk coming back, is an interesting one, because I just don't remember Tusk being this out for blood in a way that like Peter Magyar actually does seem to be.
Yeah.
Like, That's like, for me, that's like the negative scenario, right? Because that's the example of like, you take over from the supposedly terrible government, which is PIS, and you do fucking nothing about it. So, and it does kind of look like we're just waiting for the next Polish election, and it could really just be piss again. In a way that I feel like this really could be the end of Fidesz. It like, Viktor Orban looks kind of very personally defeated. He built this party really all around himself. I don't know what he's doing next, like CEO of CPAC Hungary or something.
he's going to get a job in the Trump administration.
He's going to get like, yeah, he's going to get like, he's going to be on like the books of like the Heritage Foundation. Yeah. I think he might just like go to America and dip. I don't know. It's actually hard to predict what this guy will do.
I think that this is where there is the clear comparison. But like, I mean, I mentioned that there's a lot of Erdoganism shit with this of mm-hmm. like, that is also the question too, right? Of like what happens post AKP, you know? I think in the sense of that one of the ability then to be there for so long, the ability to then make your head, yourself the singular figurehead of this party, that then nothing can kind of go in or out of, you know, like being hyper-centralized around you, is then, maybe they had some sort of plan for this. I don't know, but it is one of the questions. I mean, like Trump is a big question about this, right? What happens to the MAGA movement after Trump dies, like whatever, next week or something like that? JD Vance is so like, people were pointing in the sense of like, oh, it might be a JD Tucker bill, you know, for the next election or some shit like that. But JD Vance, I mean, literally, JD Vance is one of the reasons that Viktor Orban lost this election.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. That was so good.
But that's the thing. Like, Orban was focusing so much on foreign affairs and like his image, like how Trump and the US and like other places like that see him. And yeah, having fucking JD Vance at his literal last rally before the elections, like, what are you doing? It is, I think that's why Magyar won, as you were mentioning earlier, Kieran, because Magyar focused a lot on just how shit Hungary is under Orban.
Like internal stuff. Absolutely.
Internal stuff. And like, yeah, the cost of living, the cost of living, as you were saying earlier, and all of that. And Orban was just like chilling with JD Vance.
I have to, I actually just, because I got Tisna's like party platform, like what they were campaigning on. And like it's like three out of four of them, like there's like four main policy points, right? Three out of four of them are domestic politics, and the one that isn't domestic politics is for domestic political reasons. So like, it's housing reform, we talked about that, like the state supported rental company, social services. He kind of attacks Orban in the sense of like, I'm going to put someone with like a medical degree in charge of like Ministry of Health, not just one of my buddies. That's kind of his whole thing, right? Because he's like acknowledging that like welfare and healthcare are not doing great. Mm-hmm. Economic stability, he says one of his main priorities is stabilizing the forint, the currency. And then the one that is like kind of foreign policy related is EU integration. But the reason stated for doing that is unlocking EU funds so we can spend it on improving Hungary.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because that's also, right, it's the limits as well, that then it's like Orban, similar to then any of these right-wing leaders, right? They needed their anti-EUism in order to then kind of like promote their ideology. But then in doing so, constantly shooting themselves in the foot with exactly this, the frozen assets sort of thing of that thing, or frozen, not frozen assets, that's what's happening to Russia, but like frozen developmental funds, or the denial of developmental funds from the European Union, which is, it is free money. Like the fact is that the Orban government was so ideologically stupid that they denied free money is also just insane to me. And you know what, like at that point, in the sense of like, that type of EU integration is, you know, completely fine. You know, I mean, it's in the sense of where that then goes, I guess, is questionable.
Yeah, but I think it's also like, if you look to the successes, quote unquote success stories, this is all gone capitalist logic, GDP, all very flawed. But the successes of Eastern Europe in the EU have all been like the countries that were like EU funds, hell yeah. That's Romania. Mm-hmm. That's like Romania. They've had like China level growth for like all years bar last one. Like they're, and it's mostly because they're starting from a terrible position. But it's still just like, yeah, what do you mean EU funds? Why would you say no to these? What are you fucking talking about?
It's just very funny in the sense that that is like the, I don't know, yeah, like maybe the state doing things and giving money to things, good.
Yeah. The other weird thing is it's possible that Orbanism has kind of broken Hungarian neoliberalism in the sense that like Orban was quite statist. Like, I remember watching those documentaries that were like, here we are at basically the state-owned cheese factory in rural Hungary that Orban was like responsible for. And it's all for like mercantilist kind of like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of fucking bullshit reasons. But it is still just like, hey, this town's equivalent in another country, even a Western European country, would be fucking a wreck if it weren't for this fucking state-owned cheese factory.
Well, it's the kind of like Russian cartelism, right? Like it is. Yeah. It's very much like they're not really state-owned industries. They are. It's the purest form of corruption.
State-friendly industries. Yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's that plus the fact that like Tisna and Peter Magyar comes in with one of our remedies to cost of living is a state-owned kind of like rental company, basically. And that's like Macron would not suggest that. Like,
God, no. Never.
I also think the thing that I'm a little bit impressed with in terms of a comparison to Poland is how more aggressively in the other direction Magyar's policy seemed to be going. One of the things that I saw, which, you know, Poland would never, is that like Tisna is talking about getting Hungary on the euro in 4 years. Like that's a, yeah, we have our issues with that, but it is just like, that is like aggressively departing from like Fidesz policy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Also, homie, don't do it. I know that it's like, it's tempting. It's tantalizing, dare I say. You're going to wreck your economy even more. Look at Croatia. Or, what? Yeah, wait, yeah. Croatia who just went on to it? Yeah, great. Phenomenal idea.
Bulgaria is the most recent now.
Oh, God, yeah.
I do remember the...
Look at Montenegro. Montenegro is so expensive.
Yeah. But the... yeah, I think it's just kind of hard to pitch that to the Hungarian public now that they've had, like, their local currency operating like a cryptocurrency for the last, like, year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, like, maybe it's in the sense of, like, I mean, I'm not giving Poland credit, but, like, one of the smartest things that they have done is remained off the euro during their periods of massive economic growth.
The other thing is the difference is there's also a populism difference. My understanding is when polling is done in Poland, people don't want to leave the zloty, but people in Hungary want to leave the forint. Like there is just like the euro polls well in Hungary.
It is the dumbest idea to get rid of your own monetary policy. Please don't do it. You can control your own currency. Please, you can fix it. You can fix it yourself. It is the problems of Orban's really, really, really stupid economic policies. It is not the fact of you having your own currency. Do not do it. The euro is a failed project. It is bad. No, Hungary, stop.
Just yelling, you're doing the fucking Breaking Bad meme.
No, I'm doing the thing of in Interstellar where he's like yelling at his daughter.
Anything else? Okay, so what do we want to talk about next? Do we want to, like, 'cause there's where do we think this could go wrong, or where do we think Peter Magyar is not going to depart from policy as much as like the libs seem to think? Or do we want to talk about,
I don't think that we have, like, just to be honest of us on the show and the fact that then that it's like this happened a week ago, I don't want to get into the annoying speculative realm of what a right-wing pro-Euro government's going to, like a pro-Europe government's going to do. I think that that's like, it could work, you know? And I mean, it could work in the logic of capitalism, right? Like, it could be a successful transition. Hungary could then normalize itself within the European Union, within NATO, within this, with that. Like, you know, great. Hooray. Europe will be really happy about that. The thing that I'm most concerned of, which I think we can just skip right to, is what happens to the like thought project of Orbanism, the international nationalism that Orban has been like massively pushing, is going to collapse. You know, the amount of like just like that is, I think, the most interesting thing actually of this post-election, is something that then is not even like politically necessarily adjacent to the country itself, more just like the ideological web that it's created.
Uma, did you have something to say? Because I also want to talk about this.
Yeah, no. I was going to say, I'm not sure about the faith that I have in him, but specifically because when Pride was banned in Budapest, like last year, was it? He put out this statement and it was just basically the most lukewarm. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying he's like a gay ally or whatever, but like, I wasn't expecting him to be. but like, it was just basically, he doesn't say the word pride or like LGBT plus in any sentence of the statement. And he just basically uses it to attack Orban and say that Orban is just attacking like the freedom of assembly. So it just feels like, I don't know, he's not going to be that much better ideologically or like morally, really, than Orban. I mean, in like, obviously not as bad because Orban was really bad, but like, I just don't feel he's like very open-minded either.
I think, you know? Specifically on that point, because I agree, we've been talking, I think, very exclusively in the realms of economics and geopolitics.
Yeah.
I think social issues, he's going to be very similar.
Sorry, Kieran, yeah, you're not going to get me to lib out, all right? All right? I think that, I mean, the idea then of the freedom of the assembly thing too, that also means that then that the neo-Nazi protest gets to stay, right?
Probably, that's the thing. Like.
And they're happening at the same time.
Yeah.
We're calling it March Day, where everyone can just march, and it's in March. I'm Hungarian Peter. Signing off. Yeah, it's I don't think anything like, for all the like celebrations of like particularly Guardian Europe, because I get so like, for anyone who doesn't know, because it can be hard to miss, The Guardian has for a while had like a Europe edition, right? Like it used to be like UK, Australia, US, so these things you could do the drop down menu at the top, and they added a Europe one, and I'm like, their coverage is quite good. I like what they're trying to do. However, it is still British libs, and thus there's like some problems there. But one of the issues is just this kind of euphoria around Peter Magyar that I think he's like, I agree with Uma. I think particularly on like the LGBT stuff, he's going to be a disappointment to those people. I think maybe at best we're going to just see him be kind of apathetic towards it, of like, yeah, it should be allowed to happen on freedom of assembly terms.
Yeah.
But not on like
protecting the rights of, you know, LGBT plus people.
Of some kind.
Is again the end, like I you know what, the Hungarians are allowed to lib out, all right? I'm giving you the pass, all right? You can
they were jubilant as
absolutely.
Well, that's another thing.
You know,
like,
what you should
be Budapest was popping.
Absolutely, like Viktor Orban was horrible, you know, for multiple different reasons. But I do fear that then that I don't know if it's going to be in the sense that then Fidesz can like necessarily like come back from this in the similar way that then like, you know, kind of Trump came back from the just Biden just dropping every opportunity. Like, but like, you know, I mean, I don't think that we can have like that colossally bad of a term.
Yeah, because I think we've already kind of established, it seems like Magyar is willing to like act in a way that Biden wasn't.
Yeah, because again, the European right-wing liberal understands power in politics. You know, they're going to open up like Peter Magyar is going to like take the he's going to seize the state owned TV station, open it up for investment. And there's going to be like an Axel Springer fucking, you know, Magyar shit that opens up, you know.
Yeah,
it's very easy to then like Orban, again, similarly to a like corporatist or clientelist state, just kind of like kept his friends around him, allowed them to have companies and this and that and that. And just, you know, kind of have this moment of like, yeah, oh, we're going to like, you know, auction off, not auction it off, but it's like, oh, we're going to have more competition. We're going to have more of this. We're going to like, Europe's going to love it, you know, in the sense of it's like in that type of like internal domestic investment sort of stuff and whatnot, it's going to be fine. But I agree with like, you know, very much the point of that, then it's like, they're going to be able to get away with a lot more of the right wing shit now because Europe's going to be just like applauding them the whole time, you know?
Like, I think what we might be saying here, at least what you're saying, is it's just Meloni again. Because that's what Meloni did.
Yeah.
Like, she kind of got in and being like, this is an acceptable right wing because she aligns on, like, she's not like anti-EU in the way that Lega is. She's not aligned with Russia the way Lega was.
And she's still like, just as right wing on like every other position, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we've now, you know, the idea of like Russia, Ukraine stuff being a right or left wing topic is stupid. But, you know, in the sense of just like, you know, the economic and the social things, Meloni is like a proto-fascist, you know, like still.
But yeah, she was in fucking MSI like, or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Hey, forgot about them and her whole thing.
Yeah.
But you called this forever ago, Kieran. You said that Meloniism is the future, and here we are. And I think that you might...
Certainly for the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pat myself on the back there. And but now we do need to talk about what Nick has already brought up, which is
my favorite Euronews'
favorite guest speakers on their panel shows. For anyone who doesn't know, because you live in a different part of the world... Orban has somewhat successfully built, like, obviously there was that media network within Hungary, which we talked about, Peter Magyar going into those studios being like, you're fired. but there is also the think tank network that has greater ambitions than just Hungary. We did an episode, a couple of years ago now, but about like the MCC, which, God, what does that stand for? Matthias Corvinus Collegium. I don't know.
That's so lame.
Yeah. Wank. but like, they were the ones who were like, oh, you're being Magyar phobic because you're mean to Orban. They have been, them along with a handful of other think tanks, Danube Institute, the Center for Fundamental Rights, the Szedveg Foundation, there's loads of these things, have been kind of spreading throughout Europe. They're very involved in Brussels politics of like spreading this, I guess the term that Orban coined, a liberal democracy kind of viewpoint. And we have to wonder if that is just going to fall apart immediately or if it will maintain itself.
I think that you mentioning the illiberal democracy just made my like brain tickle for a second, right? Of it's like, there is just like, I think that then that this is our massive misunderstanding of liberals is this illiberal democracy point of Orban. Of that then it's just like, Orban is power being implemented within the way that then that liberals also want to do it, just done in a way that they don't like it. You know, Orban and the right wing under this like national economic idea that Orban had an understanding of power, and sure, it's corrupt, it's whatever, it's this and that and that. It's just like, it's the same thing of like when the US just like does, oh, you know, like lobbying and corruption are the same thing. We just call it something different. The illiberal democracy you know, wording and whatnot, I think really, like, they weren't themselves promoting that idea. They're promoting this idea of them, like, the new modern conservative, basing itself yeah. on a lot of principles actually out of the United States. So using the most perfect liberal, you know, nation state concept and trying to then get a lot of those intellectuals over. Intellectuals is giving these people way too much fucking credit, but, like, you know, taking things like the American conservative also, I believe, had money coming from Hungary and stuff like this, yep. you know.
And the European conservative.
And the European well. Conservative. And the idea then of create. I mean, remember, like, years ago, Tucker Carlson does an episode, like a week-long thing of him in Budapest to then show that this is the new center of true classical liberal freedom, and very specifically mentioning it in the sense of, like, that tradition of, like, libertarianism and whatnot. And I think that then that, like, that is also, like, a point that, like, while it is, like, very funny to see, like, the Magyar phobic stuff and whatnot and this and that and that, ideologically Hungary did try to professionalize it. It's just that then that the weirder that the right got, Hungary couldn't keep up, you know, because there is, like, the anti-intellectual yeah. movements of, like, the Trump administration or, like, the AfD and stuff like that doesn't really care about going to CPAC Budapest. And I think that then that it's going to collapse in itself for that reason, maybe not necessarily in the reason that then the funds aren't there, but I could be wrong.
I mean, they did kind of, like, understand how to build something like this. Like, they were right, they were correct strategically to put, like, someone on every fucking panel show you possibly could get someone on.
Very true.
That is how yeah, like,
here is fucking Johnny Combustion from the fossil fuel industry to talk about why we need to have more V8 engines made or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an American playbook.
Yeah. 100%.
It's a very American right wing media playbook of just, like, I'm just here asking questions, like, you know, the science isn't in about climate change or whether women exist or whatever.
But I think that's why it can't work. Like, I think ultimately at its thing is that, like, given, like, the European might be dumb, this and that and that.
I mean, it's a type of political influencing that's kind of new or novel to Europe a little bit. Just like I think Europe's a bit more used to panel shows being staffed by, like, actual elected officials, and they would talk about their party's kind of, like, position. They haven't really been exposed to the institutional laundering of professional opinions of, like, oh, the Martinus Corvinus Collegium, that sounds Latin and sophisticated, and definitely it's something that wasn't founded in, like, 2027 or whatever.
Yeah. Loser University.
Yeah. I think it all, well, okay, it's worth pointing out that the people involved in this think it's all going to go away immediately. I don't know if anyone's been paying attention to Rod Dreher's blog.
My favorite. My favorite closeted trans woman, I guess he would be, right?
Rod Dreher is a fixation. Do you know Rod Dreher, Uma?
Is that the Bachelor guy that, or, like, a guy from reality TV that, like, no?
No. Okay. Rod Dreher is an American conservative who had the whole, like, oh, you know, I'm moving to Hungary because that's where, like, conservative politics are. He then gets hired by the Danube Institute.
Okay. No, because when Nick said the trans woman thing, there was this guy from, like, The Bachelor or, like, whatever. I don't know, like, some reality guy that, like, wanted to, like, cater to MAGA and then started dressing up like a quote unquote like a woman, as in just putting on a bit of lipstick and, like, you know.
I love him.
No, but the thing is, like, he looks so happy. and Freya. Yeah.
Oh, right.
No,
and everyone was being like, dude, maybe, like,
yeah,
he was
taking
it to the max. Every post, he was just like, you know, because he was like, if anybody can be a woman, then I'm a woman now. And it's like, yeah, you get it. Look at you. You look beautiful. You know?
Yeah,
he looks so happy.
I put 8 hours into looking like this, and I love it. Actually, I hate it.
Yeah.
No, the reason why I say that Rod Dreher is secretly trans is because he, like, wrote this. He, like, he did an investigative piece where all he watched was sissy porn.
Yeah, no, he's
oh my god. I mean, that's the thing. Like, literally every time they put, like, the stats of porn that is watched and, like, in the most conservative places, it's always trans porn. Always.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, but Rod Dreher had to, like, do an investigation of why is sissy porn connected to, like, people transitioning. Instead of maybe being smart and realizing that then it's like, oh, this is like a thing that then that I am into or want or whatever, he just reads it in the sense that sissy porn is making people trans.
There's been a lot of articles that he's written about, like, you know, the classical European freedom of, like, the males only bathhouse, et cetera, et cetera. there's some questionable stuff there. Other podcasters deal with it. But, like, most notably, he had a recent post where he was like, where he wrote it on the Sunday of the election, the eve of the results, and basically said, like, I think the Danube Institute is going to be gone tomorrow, kind of thing, like the thing that hires him for his fake job where he talks about how, like, I don't know, Barney's gone woke or something. Like, he's also one of those kind of, like, conservatives who talks about cartoons way too much.
Oh, also a Catholic who converted to Eastern Orthodox. So freak.
Also,
that's freaky bad behavior.
He wasn't, also, isn't that his second conversion? He wasn't born into Catholicism.
No, he was not. I don't think he was born in Catholicism either. So it's just like,
He did the whole, like, I joined Catholicism because I thought it was like anti-woke Protestantism. Oh, wait, it isn't. I'm going to join Orthodox because I think that's anti-woke Protestantism.
Which he is. Yeah. He is right then on that one, I guess, in the sense of it is Orthodox. Yeah, Orthodox is anti-woke Catholicism.
So, yeah, like, the people who work at these networks think that it's probably all going to come tumbling down.
I mean, I hope so.
It does. Yeah,
not for our sake. Actually, it gives us less things to talk about.
It was a good content generator for us. I'll be real.
We will be putting in a bid for one of these stupid websites.
We buy one of the Orban think tanks, and we're just like, no, we're actually not going to influence your message. Just keep doing it, and we're just going to take the piss of it on our podcast. It's like, don't you want to make it like a think tank that would, like, promote socialist ideas in a European state? It's like, that sounds like a lot of work.
No, I want to convince conservatives that they're into, like, that, like, weird fucking milking shit or whatever.
Oh, yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, easy.
Now that the open bid on Hungary's influence network, we can
I'll pay you in your made-up-ass currency. It's fine.
Yeah. It's like, we'll pay them a tenner. What is that, like a million forints?
Oh my god, I saw this, like, real, on a complete different note, this like dumb restaurant down the street here that's like very bad millennial coded, and it had like a, like, making money ass fucking picture, and there was like Hungarian florins in it, and I'm like, that's like $8. Like, that's like, you cannot flex with that money. It looks like a lot because it says like 15 million on it or whatever, but
yeah. I think, I don't know, I get the impression that Orban's and Fidesz was just so singularly based around him that, like, it's kind of possibly over now. Not to say that, like, Hungary's suddenly fixed or whatever, but, like, I think this is the difference between it and PIS was that PIS really wasn't this singularly focused. PIS seemed more like a party. Rather than
an ideological, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But with that is our, we're at an hour now, so that's our assessment of Hungary elections. There is a good deal of wait and see. We'll see what Peter Magyar does. We'll see what happens to Orban in opposition, if anything. I think tickets for CPAC Hungary next year might be real cheap and we should go.
Yeah.
Sponsored.
We're here for the last CPAC Hungary. Yeah, that'd be good fun.
That is the thing, like the lineups have been getting so bad. Like, who's gonna be next year?
Yeah.
Like Clavicular. No, he'd be too big. No, it couldn't be. He'd be too much. He's too big. It'd be like the Polish Clavicular.
Yeah, it'll be like a deep cut in that body like modding scene or whatever. It'll be
looks
like
maxing.
Yeah. Looks maxing.
A body modification is something different, Kieran.
They'll get someone from the body modification scene
on accident
from the maxing scene. And this big guy demonstrated that he put like his contactless payment card into his wrist.
Or just a person that has really big gauges.
Oh, god damn it. Anyway, we do have something to shout out, which is Girovision Numero 6 is available now. You can buy tickets on our Patreon. However, I've been informed that Patreon doesn't allow you to buy multiple tickets, and people have already complained. So I'm going to figure out another solution. People who have bought Patreon tickets or want to buy Patreon tickets, you'll be honored. I'll figure out something else and I'll announce it on the next episode. Tickets are available now, technically. 16th of May, we are back in Film Atcha, which is where we did Girovision 2024 in.
There'll be a lot of couches or whatever hell everyone sat in last time.
It was. I loved the vibes of that place. Are you kidding me? It was so good.
It was good. Yeah.
Yeah. So do come down for that. You can also pay at the door. I think the bar, like it was last time, will also go towards Heal Palestine, is charity that we're giving money to. From my research, it seems like they still have access to actually, you know, do things in Gaza, because that's a real concern with Palestinian-based charities, is sometimes they just can't get into Gaza. For anyone who doesn't know, we are doing People's Champs. We are getting the most voted for songs of the last 10 years for every country and putting them against each other. We are relitigating Loreen versus Caria. We are Chanel Slow-Mo is getting a chance again. It's all happening. And with that, we will catch you there, 16th of May. We'll be on Twitch as well if you can't come. Also, let me know if you're interested in going to a screening in the Netherlands, because some of our listeners are trying to organize that.
We're getting literally international now.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Absolutely. Two countries that are very similar to each other and right next to each other. And with that, we will catch you on the bonus feed. Ciao, ciao.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.